So ask the opportunity to speak on the Dhamma and pay my respects, my highest boundless respects to Lumpu Awan Kemako, who has this kindness and compassion to give me the opportunity to teach the Dhamma here. So all of us here, we have the sincerity of heart to listen to the Dhamma and to study the Dhamma. But in truth, that Dhamma, it's not something far away from us, but it's right close by to us. Because we have these physical properties and these mental properties. And we also have mindfulness and wisdom, knowledge. We study and practice the Dhamma. When we do this, then we can gain an understanding into it, depending upon the guidance of our teacher. When we are ones who have little wisdom, but we're close to a wise teacher like Lumpu, we listen to his teachings, his guidance constantly, and through that we train ourselves, we develop our character. And even though we may have little wisdom, little barami, these spiritual qualities, but as Lumpu Cha, Ajahn Chah said, that for those people who have little spiritual virtues but are close to a great teacher, then through listening to their teachings and inclining their minds and practicing following, then they can progress easily in the Dhamma. They can practice to a point where their doubts in the path of the practice disappear. So I've looked into the biographies of all of the great teachers in the forest tradition, and also listened to the biography of Lumpu Awan. And he had immense respect for all of these great teachers. Lumpu Kongma, for example, he was one who was very skilled in wisdom. He had practiced and studied the Dhamma a lot. And for myself, I had had one teacher, Lumpu Punna, and he stayed at Wat Pa Chai Walin in Konkan province. When he was a layperson, he helped to construct a reclining Buddha image at Lumpu Gongma's monastery. And he told me once that Lumpu Gongma was the foremost in wisdom out of all of the disciples of Lumpu Man, Venerable Ajahn Man. Lumpu Fan was the foremost in samadhi and psychic powers. So therefore, Lumpu Awan has immense merits, that he was able to ordain with Lumpu Gongma. And he was very close to many of these great teachers who helped to train his mind to the highest level already. And the result of that, then, is that we can rely upon his goodness, his merits. We can rest and find shelter under the shade of his virtues. But really, that Dhamma that Lumpu Awan has taught us, well, he teaches us to be generous. He teaches us to be virtuous, to use those to overcome greed, hatred, and delusion. He's taught us to close the paths to the lower realms. That if we walk along wrong paths, then we can get ourselves into the state of being hungry ghosts, asura guys, animals, or people who are crazy, those who don't have mindfulness and wisdom. Which is that we don't have these five precepts. But he's taught us already that we should take this path. We should walk this path. And this is a path which takes us to happiness, a path that takes us to peace, a path that takes us to gain knowledge, to gain an understanding into the physical and mental qualities, to see the truth in sankhara's conditioned phenomena abeya, anicca, dukkha, anatta, that they're constantly changing things, that they're stressful, that they're not self, to give rise to wisdom through this. So as disciples of his, we have this opportunity to listen to his Dhamma. And then we think about that and contemplate it, and we try to practice following it. And even though in the beginning it may be tough, but as we start changing our character traits to become better, to become higher, in the end we'll be able to be someone who is consistently giving and generous. And the villagers here have a great chance, a great opportunity, a lot of merit, that they have a great teacher like this who has come to stay and build a monastery here in order to help them. And that has helped them a lot. And many monks have come to practice with Lumpu Awan as well, that he's helped to raise their minds, to build their hearts so that they can have a strong foundation for themselves. And the villagers get the chance to offer them alms food, to listen to the Dhamma teachings of Lumpu each day. So we have studied and contemplated and listened to his Dhamma teachings, put those into practice consistently. And this is a way for us to refine our minds from minds which are very thick, what we call a putujana, people who have thick hearts. But through listening to the Dhamma, then we build up this goodness. We're consistently generous, consistently virtuous. And in the end, our minds will change and change. There'll be minds that have knowledge, understanding, intelligence. And then they change into a Kalyanachana, the mind of a beautiful being. And that's because we're close to a wise teacher like this. So with us as his disciples, then we practice following the teachings we get, then that's a blessing in our lives. And when we have this blessing in our lives, then we use that to practice even more. That we train our body and our speech to be very firm in goodness and virtue. That we develop these good qualities in our hearts, this goodness, and this is a really important foundation for us that leads us to develop in samadhi and wisdom. So when we have these five precepts constantly within our hearts, well, perhaps in the beginning, we can start off just taking up the five precepts on the lunar observance days once a week. When our barami, the spiritual virtues, are still quite weak, then we can do that just once a week. But this is an important starting point, that first day of taking up these five precepts. Then as the days pass and pass, our barami becomes stronger and stronger. Our faith and belief in our teacher's teachings grow. And then we'll be able to keep these five precepts just as a normal part of what we do. That we can close the door to the lower realms. And close the paths to falling down. So we're able to start doing this. We can choose this through our mindfulness and wisdom. We have this great teacher who has taught us already. And we have faith that he is taking us to heaven, that he's taking us to mindfulness and wisdom, which can free us from all kinds of suffering, whether great or small. And so through that faith, we practice following with generosity, with virtue, and cultivating our minds. Have this sila dhamma, this quality of virtue, consistently there within our hearts, giving rise to peace, giving rise to coolness. And then the heart becomes bright, good, beautiful, joyful. So we can recollect the times that we have bowed to our teacher, and just through that, joy and peace can arise within the heart. So this place here is an important place. And through my understanding that this area, this village, Ban Kok Namon, is a place where Lumpu Man, Ajahn Man, came to practice. Lumpu Sao also came here, and many teachers until Lungta Mahabua. And what I've read in his biography, that this is the place where he sat in meditation until the skin on his bottom split. So it's a really important place, this monastery. The many great teachers, many arahants, have come to train here. So we have come here as well in order to study and to practice with the faith in our teacher, Lumpu Awan Gemako, one who has reached security and safety in his heart, who has a heart which is peaceful and cool. So we've got a lot of merit already that we can practice with him, and so we practice following, training in samadhi, developing our body and speech well, training in this quality of samadhi, bringing up a peaceful heart. When the heart has a small amount of peace, we call that kanaka samadhi. And so in the beginning, for all of us lay people, we train with faith leading us. We have effort. But even though we have this effort, the samadhi will happen bit by bit. We're aware that samadhi is the quality that will give rise to wisdom. And when the mind is bright through wisdom, then that wisdom is going to take us to being consistently generous as well, to keeping our precepts well. And so that comes from wisdom. That wisdom then flows into effort in our training, building up our hearts, giving rise to samadhi. So it's possible that sitting in meditation, listening to the Dhamma, that samadhi can arise right there, and to feel this inner contentment, fullness. We can see the truth in all things, that they're merely conventions. And sometimes the mind gains this understanding into anicca, dukkha, anatta, and here vimutti, liberation, appears. So the heart becomes bright, and this quality of joy arises within it. And it makes our faith in the teachings of the perfectly self-awakened Buddha and our own teacher firm. A teacher who has trained his own mind and then come to pass on these teachings to us. And when we gain a very deep understanding into the Dhamma, then we gain this feeling like we've devoted our minds wholeheartedly to our teacher. So we do this, we offer our body and our life to our teacher. We're able to drop any conceit, and we listen to his instructions. The things that he has said, the things that he has taught, we follow those, we practice in line with it. And the results appear for us bit by bit. We relieve all the doubts that we have in the path of practice. And it's normal in the beginning, with there being so many different ways to meditate. Maybe we've read so many different things, and that we have a lot. It's normal in the beginning that maybe people who have come into contact with many different kinds of meditation, we've read a lot, and we think that we have a lot of knowledge in this world. We've studied the Dhamma a lot in many different places. But the result this can have is for us to be hesitant, to bring up doubts, for us to not commit to something. We try meditating, but then as we do that, we doubt along at the same time. We try reciting the word Buddha. We do that for a bit, and then we stop, and we think we're going to change and try some other meditation method. There are a lot of people like this, and I myself was like this as well. But these doubts, they slow us down. However, we think that we want to get fast results. We want to meditate in a way that brings quick results for us. The great masters have taught us that if we want to get fast results, then we shouldn't do anything. We just stay still and indifferent, just let go. But here, are we able to get results fast? Well, we can't. was once a student who asked Lungpucha this question. He said, "How do I meditate to get fast results?" And Lungpucha responded, "Well, you want things fast, well, don't do anything." As I listened to this, I thought, well, if you don't do anything, then what are you going to get? It's just that I hadn't got it yet because my practice hadn't yet reached that point where I was able to let go of everything, let go of all physical and mental things. So we need to walk the path first and following what he had taught and to not be impatient with it. We just take it like this, that we're generous, we're virtuous, and we meditate. And we meditate, and what our teacher has taught us is to recite Buddha. And so we try to do that constantly throughout the day. But then we may worry that, well, if I only recite Buddha, then I won't have any wisdom. But this word Buddha, it translates as the one who knows, the awakened one, the joyful one. But for us, we're not yet awakened. We don't yet know. We're not joyful in our hearts, right? And so therefore we need to meditate using this word Buddha first. So when we recollect the one who knows, the awakened one, the joyful one, this is Buddhanusati, the recollection of the Buddha. And when we do this, one of the benefits of that, the results, is that leads the mind into Upajara Samadhi, into neighborhood concentration. But then we've read that for those who want Nibbana, they need a mind which is unified in Apana Samadhi. And so we doubt again. But when we've practiced already and the mind starts becoming still, we start gaining an understanding, then we can use that to contemplate. We contemplate into this body. We can contemplate it as a heap of elements, that's fine, or something unattractive, or we can contemplate it as a mass of anicca, dukkha, anatta. So we walk this path through wisdom, and this brings the mind to peace, and does so more easily. And the act of paying attention to the breath coming in and going out becomes easier. The mind becomes more peaceful. And this word of Buddha can slowly disappear without our intending for that to happen. We know the breath coming in and leaving, and then we start seeing the breath become more and more subtle. And when it's subtle, what's it like? The mind starts becoming still. There's this rapture that arises, a happy heart appears. So with rapture, there are five kinds of that, and just like what we've heard in the Dhamma of our teacher, that is mentioned how the hairs on the body can stand on end and goosebumps can appear, or there can be tears of joy flowing. The body can feel like it's expanding. Both the body and the mind become very light, or it can feel like the hands and the feet are disappearing. And so this is the mind becoming peaceful, entering into samadhi. This is the quality of samadhi beginning to appear in the mind on its initial levels. The mind, which was very scattered, it starts coming in within bounds, just like a chicken within an enclosure, that it doesn't really leave that enclosure. And so the thoughts don't really go out, and they come in more and more. The mind becomes more and more peaceful. And then this quality of looking, investigating, studying comes up. And we study and investigate in line with what we've heard our teacher teach, how he's taught us to train our minds. Through that, then, we begin to gain more of an understanding, see more clearly. And we see into this very body here. We see into hair of the head, hair of the body, nails, teeth, and skin. Kesa loma naka danta tacho. And so we'll see this little by little. We can see just a piece of hair fall off the body and just how that's elements, and then it becomes empty. Or we can contemplate this body and see it as being something unattractive. And here the mind becomes attractive, becomes beautiful. Because if we see the body as being beautiful, then the heart gets lost, deluded, and dark. But if we see it as not beautiful, then the heart becomes bright and beautiful. So here the mind becomes still, well established in peace. We contemplate into the body, this emptiness appears. When we see this emptiness arise, then the heart loses all of its doubts. These doubts just go. And we see that the world is this way. And the mind then passes beyond the world. And then we know that the mind that's gone beyond the world is like this. The mind understands clearly and sees this path of practice and meditation. And so we lose all the doubts there, and our meditation becomes stronger and stronger. The samadhi becomes more constant and connected, and this gives rise then to wisdom. Sila, samadhi, and panya come following and become one single thing. They gather together each day that passes. And we see that this body is just emptiness. The body is just empty like this. And our doubts disappear through our practice. And so this happens. It starts at the beginning, that when we enter into the Buddhasasana, just get to know about it, to study it. And we may have so many doubts as high as a mountain, but those slowly reduce and reduce. And why is that? It's through receiving this refinement due to our training and meditation, through listening to the Dharma and putting that into practice, that none of the doubts disappear through our reading, through our thinking, but they disappear through the practice, through listening to the Dharma and putting that into practice. And so that's how these doubts can leave our hearts. And when it reaches a point that even if we wanted to doubt, we wouldn't be able to doubt, that the mind is peaceful and it's just not able to proliferate on anything. There's no proliferation, no thoughts going on because there's this stillness and peace within the heart. Rapture arises. There's vitaka, vichara, piti, sukha, ekagata. So the initial and sustained application of the mind is rapture, this happiness and a unification of mind. So there's this arising of joy, of happiness. There's peace and stillness in the heart. And this is something which is possible to arise within practitioners. So we are practitioners, both the monks here and the laity. And if we train our mind already, then it's possible for our mind to be able to reach this point, for it to be trained to get to this point. This is something which is independent of time. And even though the Buddha has passed into parinibbana already, the Gurubhajans, the great teachers, they've passed already, but the Dharma of the Buddha that they took to tell and teach us, this is something that we've received. It's just that, are we doing that sincerely yet? Because they've told us that the Dharma exists on the shore of death. And if we do it for real, then we need to get real results from it. So we just train our minds to be here in this present moment, to let go of all of the objects of the mind, to let go of both past and future. So we come to recite these meditation words to cultivate our mind, to be training ourselves in kammatthana. This kamma is work or action, thana is a basis. So what then is the basis for a meditation? Well, it's mindfulness in the body, mindfulness and feelings, mindfulness over the mind and the Dhamma. So this is what great teachers have done. They have mindfulness in the Vedana and feelings, contemplating Vedana until it breaks up and the mind is able to separate out from those feelings. And so we train following them, but we need to do so in line with our own energy as well, because these teachers, they had a lot of energy, but we need to do it bit by bit in line with the energy that we do have. And so we put up a fight against these feelings, these painful feelings. And if the mind is peaceful, then we use that to contemplate the body, to be seeking out the truth within this very body. because this body, it's the basis of our delusion. And even though the mind may be well settled in peace, but these wise teachers, they've told us, don't just contemplate the mind, but rather take this mind which is calm and use it to seek out wisdom within this very body. To be contemplating this body, to be separating it out into its elements, to be separating the khandhas out, until we can see clearly into it, that what is this body like, and how is there a me or a mine within it? So if we just use wisdom on the level of thought, then our mind gets blocked. It doesn't break through into clarity. We try to contemplate the blood of the body, and the blood which is taken out of the body, we can see that that's not self, but we still consider the blood within the body to be me. And so the energy of our thoughts finishes just at this point. It's not able to take us to a clear knowing and seeing into the truth. And for that, we need the energy of mindfulness and wisdom, which we're able to train and give rise to within our minds. Whether we are standing, sitting, walking, lying down, that we have mindfulness there. So if we have that mindfulness well established with this meditation word of Buddho, Buddho, then the mind reaches into stillness. Wherever we're walking, we're mindful, till the mind settles down, becomes still. It's easier here. The heart becomes gentle and pliable. From contemplating the body, see it break apart, see it as anicca, dukkha, anatta. And it's easy to do this. We can contemplate a piece of hair falling off and see how that's not self, or a flake of skin falling off the body and that's not self, until it just disappears and we know the state of it clearly. The mind is empty. The mind enters into what we can call passing over becoming and birth, passing over the world. Gotarabhu citta, gotarabhu jnana, they appear within our own minds, until sila, samadhi, and panya gather together. And all we have to do is just know something and wisdom will arise. So it can be like this when we are contemplating along. So just like when we're watching our breath. The breath comes in, stays for just a little bit, and then it leaves. And right here is vipassana, is insight. And so if we contemplate, for example, that people having been born, they all need to die. And that's true for ourselves as well. So the mind becomes still, becomes very calm, settled. And then there can start being proliferation, that this is a person who has died, that it's this person, it's that person. But then the mind knows that, well, that's not actually true, that there's no person who's died. They don't have a name. There's no real convention there at all. The mind can become empty. And seeing the body is just a body. And we enter into this principle. So when we have mindfulness in the body, there's knowing in the body already, then this mindfulness appears. There's this quality of mindfulness there. And when this quality of mindfulness is present, then the quality of wisdom arises. We see the body is just a body. It's not a being, not a self, not a me, not a you. And so we have listened to or read the scriptures on the topic of the foundations of mindfulness, and they say that the body is like this. But when the mind becomes peaceful and still, and then this true knowledge appears within the mind, then we see people walking around, and we see them just as robots. They're just robots like this. We see it's merely a body. It's not a being. It's not an individual. It's not a self, not a me, not a you. And both the body and the mind become very bright. There's this joy within the Dhamma because of seeing like this. From seeing into the truth of conventions, then liberation arises. We have faith, then. There's this belief and inspiration within our hearts, and it becomes more and more firm and strong, that it doesn't change. The mind is firm. This joy arises, happiness appears. And we look back and think, well, what did this come from? what arose from our studying of the Dhamma, from seeing the noble truth of suffering, and finding a way out of that suffering, seeking out a great teacher who's like both our mother and father, our teacher in the Dhamma, someone that we can depend upon as a refuge who can lead us. And so we see how each of these great teachers of the previous generation, they all sought out Lumpur Man, Ajahn Man. They wondered, well, where is he? And then they went following him. They all had great respect for Lumpur Man. And this is the same for Lumpur Cha, for Ajahn Cha. He had great respect for Lumpur Man. And he listened to his Dhamma, and his doubts and his practice left. And he said that wherever he went, Lumpur Man was teaching him all the time. That's how it was. Even when obstacles arose, he was walking on Tudong and many wild dogs came. And they came and they surrounded him. They were going to attack him. But he saw Lumpur Man come and chase them away. And all of those wild dogs, they scattered and ran away. So Lumpur Man was protecting him wherever he went, that he was teaching him so that Lumpur Cha would have Dhamma. So this is an example, but it shows us that finding a great teacher is something that's really important. So we find out a great teacher because we have suffering and we want a refuge. And so we practice in line with his teachings. Even though you're still listening to the Dhamma and still doubting, don't worry about that. Just carry on studying, carry on practicing. It's just that your mind isn't yet still and peaceful enough. But don't worry. Just carry on practicing each day, practicing, cultivating your character until your mind can settle into stillness and samadhi. And then this quality of wisdom will arise. And it'll just happen by itself at this point, that you'll walk meditation, sit meditation, cultivate your mind. You don't need to force yourself. It'll just happen naturally within your mind. When the mind is ready for the Dhamma, you listen to the Dhamma and a deep understanding into it arises. So this act of listening to the Dhamma is an act of developing the heart that makes it higher, step by step. Even though sometimes it's really not difficult at all. And the masters have taught in an easy way. I have listened to a teaching by Lumpur Cha that one of his own teachers, Lumpur Tongrad, who was a disciple of Lumpur Man, and he taught his disciples easily. This elderly monk came and there was a tree stump there. And he said, well, just make your mind like that tree stump, just like that tree stump there, the stump that's decaying away. But in the end, he understood the meaning, which is that we train the mind to have this quality of equanimity, upekkha, for it not to be given into liking or disliking at all. And so the mind that isn't liking, it's not disliking, that's the path of practice that takes us to seeing the Dhamma, to understanding the Dhamma, to knowing the Dhamma. So when we listen to the very high levels of this path, we understand that there's the upekkha bodhanga, so the factor of awakening of equanimity, the piti bodhanga, the factor of awakening of rapture like this. But the thing is, while we're practicing, we put this down. We just lay the theory aside. We lock it in the cabinet. And that's what these great teachers have said. Just put those scriptures into the cabinet. That we don't need to be reading them, but rather we take this heart to have mindfulness, to be virtuous, to be generous and have goodness, to be mindful and meditating a lot. And just that, recite Buddha a lot. And this is what relieves the doubts. So when the mind has Buddha, then it's not restless. It's not engaged in cruelty. It's not wishing harm on anyone. The mind's not heading down any wrong paths. So this mind has samadhi. It has right view and it's walking of the path. And so it has this right view, it has right intention, and everything is right. The acts of body and speech are right. The samadhi is established rightly, that there's right effort. And so then the wisdom in the mind grows and grows. These qualities, they spin and spin around until Buddha is within the hearts. So there's Buddha there, the one who knows, the awakened one, the joyful one, just a little bit of that within the hearts. So we understand like this clearly, and there's this rapture there, a fullness, contentment, a happiness of heart, and no doubts about the path of practice. And then we train our mind without stopping. And why? Because we have faith already, this faith which is not shaken, this ajara sata. So for all us who are trying to develop goodness, and we're close to a guide in the Dhamma who's also like a mother and father to us, Lumpu Awan Kemako, who we have the very highest respect for. And even though we were not born in time to meet Lumpu Man or Lumpu Gongma, but we are in time to meet with Lumpu Awan and to be close to him, to study the Dhamma with him, because he studied the Dhamma from his own teachers, from Lumpu Gongma, Lumpu Kao, Lumpu Fan, Lumpu On. And so we can then learn what he learned from them. So we just take those Dhamma teachings that they've taught and train in line with them. And what they taught, it's not complicated. They taught us to have Buddha, to abandon all wrong deeds, to have virtue, and to be intent on cultivating our hearts. So I can see here that we all have faith. There's faith together, faith in Lumpu. And he has built the stupa. It's a very beautiful, ornate, intricate stupa. So we have a heart of faith and we gather together through the energy of our body, using the energy of our wealth, also our mindfulness and wisdom to help contribute to its construction as well. And it's an important place. This is a significant Buddhist monument. So when we have a monastery that has a ordination hall already, there's a stupa already, and then we're intent that when that stupa is finished, and we have a ceremony, and in that ceremony, there's this act of listening to Dhamma teachings, the Sawakata Dhamma, the Dhamma of the Buddha. It's not involved in time. And so we listen to the Dhamma here in the present moment, and we listen to it within our hearts. And then knowledge can arise that we can see into it. And then we can become a Savaka Buddha, a disciple Buddha, that this knowledge arises within us as well. So when we have a stupa, which is beautifully intricate like this, and then we also take our hearts to pay homage through our practice. We listen to the Dhamma of these great teachers, that they are intent on training our minds. And if we have the time, we can also sit and cultivate our meditation in this place, and a coolness, a happiness can arise in our hearts here. So when the mind has this firm faith already, then wherever we stay, we meditate. When we go home, then we meditate there. We come to the monastery, and then we increase our cultivation of the mind. When we listen to the Dhamma, we're meditating. And so we see for ourselves that this path that takes us to knowing the Dhamma, the path that the minds of those who have seen the Dhamma, known the Dhamma, we see for ourselves what that is like. And that becomes clear within our own minds. Set yourself on cultivating your baramis, your spiritual virtues. Even though you may be a layperson with a family, it's still possible to attain to the Dhamma, to see the Dhamma through your intent practice, through chanting, through developing generosity, virtue, and meditation. Until the mind becomes deeply satisfied in the Dhamma, And this is something that we can't do without. So we see that it becomes a refuge for us. So the mind has samadhi as its home. It's another place for us to stay. Just like how the body has a home, and then the heart comes and resides there as well. But the samadhi, it's our home of Dhamma, something that we can rely upon that gives us coolness. Even though externally the weather may be hot, but the heart can be cool. Because we know that greed, hatred, and delusion are heated qualities. But if we train our minds to have samadhi, then they become cool. These qualities of rapture and happiness arise, and there's no anger, ill will towards anyone. So the mind here is developing the cultivation of loving kindness without stop. And so we do this each day. We train ourselves, we cultivate our character like this, and through that we progress in the Dhamma. And in the end, we understand that all things are conventions. We say that these conventions, they have names that we call them, but the heart sees that all of that is just anicca, dukkha, anatta, and then it turns to liberation, becomes free. So when the mind has this quality of samadhi, then that leads to the arising of the quality of wisdom and knowing and seeing the Dhamma. The heart passes over samsara, the cycle of birth and death. And that passing over of samsara in the beginning level, what is it that we need to abandon? And there's sakaya ditti, self-view, vichikicca, skeptical doubts, and silabhata paramasa, is attachments to practices and precepts. So these three fetters are something that lay people are able to cut as well. That it's possible to cut these kilesas finally, to have them done with in this beginning level. And this is the seeing of the Dhamma, this change that happens. And conventionally we call that a sotapanna. Sota is the inclination of the mind. And so it's the heart which is entered into the stream of the Dhamma. What happens next is that our practice of meditation, that it's not something difficult or complicated, that we contemplate this body on more subtle levels. We see it as a heap of elements. It's this earth, water, fire, and air, the flow of those. And the heart carries on meditating. We see that wherever it is that we attach, wherever we're stuck, that right there is becoming and birth. So we have mindfulness and wisdom, and this clear knowing, seeing grows and grows until the mind is able to let go right until the final stage. So all of this depends upon our practice, depends upon us having faith like we do in a teacher. So the teacher of Lumpu, Awan Kemako, who we have this very highest faith in, who has helped us, supported us to build this stupa. So we practice following his teachings, training, cultivating our character within our minds, making our minds joyful, making them peaceful, making them cool. We are ones who speak little but meditate a lot. So when we speak little, then we meditate a lot, we recite Buddha a lot, and this is an immense amount of merit. So for those who are able to be generous, then they should be generous. Some people can keep their precepts well, but they don't have much money to give away. So they can look after their precepts, be virtuous, and that is a higher level of merit. But to be able to abandon greed, hatred, and delusion, the root of all defilements, what do we need to do? We need to cultivate our minds to meditate. And this is something that we can do. When we're at home, we can do that. We can be meditating. We're mindful. And Buddha, Dhammo, Sangho, we recite firmly with our hearts. When we're traveling, whether it's far or near, we can be reciting Buddha, Dhammo, Sangho. And when this gathers, then we're just left with one word, Buddha. Then the heart gathers further and Buddha disappears. There's mindfulness more clearly there. And then the path comes together. It comes into harmony. And here we see. And just takes that seeing for all of our doubts to go. That we know the Dhamma, we see the Dhamma. And what happens next is that meditation, it's not difficult. So may all of you be training, be cultivating the character of your hearts constantly, without stop, following the ways of practice that great teachers, kind teachers have taught to us. So put up a good fight in your practice. Don't give in. When the mind is peaceful, then use that to fight against these painful feelings and not retreat. Really put your whole heart into it. When the teachers have said that the Dhamma is on the shore of death, then what do we do? Well, if we don't take it for real, then how are we going to meet with reality? But if we practice for real, then we need to be willing to make an exchange. That if it won't die, that if it won't die, then make it good. If it won't be good, then let it die. This is how the teachers have taught us. And so we then put our energy of our heart into it, into training our minds like this. If we have anger, then we tell ourselves that, well, it's normal that there's anger. We're still practicing. Anger is still present. But we endure and we don't follow it. If there's greed, then we tell ourselves, well, this is normal. But we endure and we don't follow it. If any feelings of me and mine, the conceit, arise, then endure, don't follow them, don't practice in line with them, don't speak, don't act upon them, don't just allow your mind to follow them. The things we need to abandon are the defilements that have arisen already, we need to abandon them, those that have yet to arise, we don't allow them to arise. So therefore, this word buddho, there's goodness in the levels of abandoning any unskillful deeds, cultivating the skillful, and making the mind pure, that all of that is contained within this word buddho. So when the mind gathers using this, then we don't have any doubts about meditating using this mantra. And when we don't have any doubts about that, then the mind can settle very deeply into samadhi. We know for ourselves, we see for ourselves within our own heart. And what is that? Santitiko. So the seeing for oneself, akaliko, the timeless nature of it, that arises for us. So even though you may have a lot of work, many duties, in the time of the Buddha, there were many lay people, such as those who were followers of King Bimbisara, who became Sotapanna, stream enterers. And there was a lot that took refuge in the Triple Gem. So for us as disciples of our great teacher, then we take it that we're going to really practice for real, following his teachings, that we need to be able to know the Dhamma, to see the Dhamma. So when we come to the monastery, these feelings of rapture, of happiness arise. And what is that? That's a deva, a celestial being appearing right there. So we see how in this stupa, there are many beautiful and refined pictures of devas, a lot of them. When the mind is full of faith, and then this is anaga appearing. So being one who has faith to support the Buddha Sasana so that it lasts for a long time. So that's what we are like. We have this faith. And then when we practice and lift up the level of our hearts, then we become devas. We come to the monastery, experience this coolness, this happiness, this contentment within our hearts, and that right there is a deva. We keep the five precepts as something that's just normal for us. And in the end, when the time comes, perhaps we listen to the teachings of a master and we can keep the eight precepts. the energy of our minds increases. So when I was training as a layperson, I thought that just keeping these five precepts is already good. But there was one year, the year 1975, when I went with Lumpur Buna, who was himself a disciple of Lumpur Kao, Lumpur Fan, Lumpur Gongma, to pay respects to Lumpur Lui in Chanthaburi province, in Suang Ban An, at Khao Sapap. So it's quite a long way to travel from Serapuri to there. But I took Lumpur Buna there to spend the rains retreat with Lumpur Lui. So that day, it was a Salaha Puja day, and the day before entering the rains. And Lumpur Lui gave a Dharma talk. And he said that there's so many devas, these celestial beings, coming to listen to the Dhamma on this important day of Buddhism. And a faith arose in me then. I had the sincerity to keep the eight precepts from that day forward, which I'd never done before. That day I'd just had breakfast and I hadn't prepared anything else to eat, but I'd already taken the eight precepts. And so there was many lay people who took the eight precepts on that day. So from that day forward, I took the eight precepts. And that came from this teaching by Lumpur Lui. But you can see that if I didn't have these great guides, I didn't have Lumpur Buna, then I wouldn't have had the opportunity to go and pay respects to Lumpur Lui, Lumpur Kao, and many other great senior monks. So therefore, us coming here today, or those who haven't been able to come but still have these hearts of faith, this very highest faith towards Lumpur Awan, who has reached the highest level, may you be intent to keep the five precepts on a constant basis and the eight precepts once a week on the lunar observance days. Or if you're ready, then you can keep the eight precepts each day. And that which is important is the cultivation of our hearts, this practice, our chanting, developing our meditation each morning, each evening, until we're able to bring our minds to peace, until we can pass over doubts, until rapture and happiness arises. The things that we've read in the scriptures will appear for us within ourselves. But if we only read the scriptures, just study them, then we have these factors of vitaka vichara, piti sukha, ekagata. But through reading that scripture, we may get the understanding that there needs to be thought and proliferation. However, if we meditate, then we know that that's not the case, that these arise from a peaceful heart, that vitaka is just about a single thing. It's the lifting up of a single object. So this body, for instance, the contemplation of the body. So lifting the body up to look through and examine. Lifting up hair of the head, hair of the body, nails, teeth, and skin to contemplate. Lifting this body up, seeing it as elements, contemplating it in that way. And here a clear and deep understanding can arise. This rapture and a fullness, contentment of heart comes up, a happiness arises in the heart because of seeing that. So we see that these are not beautiful things, that they're just elements. And this happiness comes up, there's an inner contentment. And that comes from this act of practicing the Dhamma, which is nourishment for our hearts. So this external food, coarse food, that's what the body depends upon to nourish it. It also relies upon the breath, relies upon the fire elements that we get from putting food into the body each day. But the food for the heart, that depends upon the Dhamma. It relies upon the Dhamma. This quality of rapture depends upon the happiness within our hearts, finding a happiness in the Dhamma that arises clearly from our practice. And it's even more the case when we can see the elements, see the khandhas, see the body as just these elements, as being an aggregate that breaks apart. And then there's even more of a feeling of contentment in the heart, this rapture, happiness in the heart that we just can't compare to anything. We see the results of our practice appearing for us. And from there, things will just carry on by themselves, that we won't miss out on our practice, we won't miss out on cultivating our minds. We won't miss out on developing mindfulness. But there'll be this effort that comes up. No one needs to force us anymore, that our faith is well established already. A peace arises, stillness arises, the mind gathers into samadhi well. The body and the mind become light. You can see this body break apart. And here we pass over. There's this gotara pujita, gotara punyana arising. We may read those qualities in the scripture and think, well, what's happening here? Why is it that when one reaches this point, one doesn't just go over for good? One's seen the other side already. That there's this shore of the world and there's that shore of the Dhamma. So having seen that, why doesn't the mind just go over? The one is standing between that point and the worldly Dhammas, but still the mind retracts, comes back. And that's because it hasn't seen completely yet. It's not yet clear. But there is a beginning of seeing and understanding. So we relieve all our doubts in this path of practice, and that goes in deep in the heart. When we do our walking meditation, sitting meditation, both the body and the mind are light like this. And in the end, the mind gathers together. Sila, samadhi, and panya gather together, and we see in line with reality. All the doubts can be relieved without difficulty. And when wisdom arises, it arises without difficulty. There's just a knowing that appear and doubts go. The defilements get cut off. Able to abandon the lower levels of the fetters. But we have to begin at this point first. We begin by being ones who are complete in generosity, complete in virtue and precepts. And then we should practice cultivating our hearts, practice like this each and every day without stopping. So when we're disciples of our beloved and great teacher, and we take him to be our guide, to be our teacher, that we need to bring up these qualities in the heart, that we take ourselves from being conventionally a monastic or a layperson, and we practice and see the Dhamma, know the Dhamma. And this is the internal monastic, the internal excellent one that appears within the heart. Raising the heart, bringing it to purity and freedom. So may I express the joy that I find in all of the lay people who have come together to listen to the Dhamma, to show their respect to their great teacher, Lumpu Awan Kemoko, to practice the Dhamma, to study the Dhamma, and gathering together to build this stupa, which is an incredibly beautiful and intricate place, a place that is a monument of Buddhism. There are also many of the very great noble beings of this tradition contained within this jetty, their images. So people can come and pay respects to them too, and also the very highest respects to the very highest thing, which is the Buddha relics contained here. So this is Buddho, Dhammo, Sangho gathering together, and they gather together within the heart, that we train these hearts so that they know, so that they see like this, so that happiness and coolness arises within them through this understanding of the Four Noble Truths, through seeing into dukkha, the stress, its origin, its cessation, and the path leading to that cessation within our own hearts like this. So may all of you grow in the Dhamma of the perfectly self-awakened Buddha. May you have peace and happiness under the cool shade of Buddhism, in the cool shade of your teacher. May you have development and prosperity.